In today's episode, we chat with Julia, mom to the lively 9-month-old Aurelia. This episode is brimming with insights and practical advice that you won't want to miss. Today, you're going to learn about the milestones of the 9-month-old, how to deal with early morning wakings, and how to develop an adventurous palate for mealtimes. At 9 months, Aurelia is crawling and more often pulling up to stand and even clapping along with those little new high fives. We'll chat about how she's exploring the world of flavors with her adventurous eating habits and using her new teeth to tackle everything from chicken to a diverse palette of foods. We also talk about how to navigate the complexities of sleep, and I give her mum tips on adjusting nap times so that you can curb those early morning wake-ups, and also when to break sleep guidelines just to get some sanity sleep. We also explore ideas on how the village of parent friends can both enhance and support little ones' social and child development. So if you're wondering about social skills, we also talk about the benefits of play groups and organizing play dates. And I also touch on how different timelines in language milestones can be perfectly normal and how social environments can give language a wonderful boost. So tune in for an episode filled with lively discussions, expert advice, and heartwarming stories from Julia and Aurelia's parenting journey.
Welcome to Sense by Makefora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Makefora, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we are going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makeya every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. Lovely to have you join us today. I am Meg Fora, and I'm delighted to have you join us along with Julia Da Silva today. Julia is our regular guest and mom to Aurelia and Santi, who's a little toddler. And we've been tracking Aurelia all the way since she was a newborn. And this week, she is almost 9 months old. So welcome, Julia. Let's hear a bit about the life of a 9-month-old.
Thanks, Meg. Very lovely to be back. Yes, I think we're hitting that phase of life where things suddenly get very busy. This child cannot be left alone for 2 seconds or she's up to mischief. So she, since the last time we spoke, which was a few weeks ago, she has started crawling. She was on the verge of it the last time we chatted, and she has now made the move. However, she's not interested in crawling. She thinks crawling is boring. She only wants to stand up all the time. So she'll crawl to something she can pull up on, and that's where it ends. So it's quite hard work to get her to actually practice and really like engage with the crawling for any length of time. She's pulling up in her cot, she's pulling up on stools, she's pulling up on in the bath, which absolutely terrifies me. I have to hold her, you know, she's all slippery and I'm literally holding her with like a bear grip trying to make sure she doesn't slip over and hit her head. So it's quite full on.
I've always said that the 9 to 18 month old age band is actually the most exhausting, and the reason is that they're mobile. But they are completely, they don't know their limits. They don't know the limits of the world. They don't understand physics. And so we've got some problems, and they definitely don't understand instruction either. By 18 months old, they start to have a little bit of language and they can understand. But gee whiz, 9 to 18 months, that is the most tiring time.
Yeah, no, it is. It's absolutely nonstop. And she also has new teeth. I mean, the last time we spoke, she had just cut her first tooth and been sort of waiting for months for that to happen. She now has 5, 4 of which emerged in the 10 days after. You know, she had 4 teeth by the time she, you know, 10 days after the first one. So, and she does this thing. I don't know if other moms have this, and I remember it vividly with Santi, where she grinds her teeth together.
Because they're interested in the feel.
Yeah, makes me want to rip my ears off. It is the worst sound in the whole world. But you can't sort of explain to her, like, darling, don't, you know, grind your teeth together. So that's one of her other sort of favorite things to do. But the sort of teeth all coming out all at once has been great. I mean, in fact, I was actually feeding her on Sunday. We had a roast chicken and I was giving her pieces of the chicken. And it was sort of interesting, really, to kind of watch her for the first time tear into a piece of food, as opposed to really kind of using her gums in the back of her, where her molars would be, to kind of munch on the food. So that was sort of interesting. She definitely developing, and we're kind of cutting the food up into smaller pieces as she gets a bit older, and the kind of pincer grip is developing and so on. So that's sort of evolving as well at this time. It's, yeah, lots going on.
And how much is she actually self-feeding, and how much are you still giving her mush, or is she entirely self-feeding now?
She's quite funny. She's not interested in being fed mush unless she has something to hold. So there's no scenario in which I can just give her some, I say puree, it's not really puree, it's just, you know, something that's kind of blended or a little bit mashed up. But she doesn't tolerate just being fed. She's, I suppose, perhaps a bit of an independent spirit, but she will happily munch on things. In fact, you know, as much as I can, I allow her to feed herself. And she's certainly adept at it, which is great. You know, and it also helps me when we're in a group situation.
Yeah, and I think that kind of takes us back to how you started your weaning journey. You know, about 6 months old, you were already very much focused on baby-led weaning and making sure she could self-feed. So that journey is amazing. And, you know, I think you're also going to find that she will not be as much of a picky eater as she would have been. You know, a lot of moms at about 9 months old find their little ones get picky and don't want to eat this and don't want to eat that. But I think when you've started off your journey with high levels of experimentation and involvement and, you know, autonomy, it really does code for a little one who's much less fussy and picky as an eater. So that's really excellent. That is what you say.
Yeah, I hope so. Certainly she's still in quite an experimental phase. She seems to be interested in everything that we give her. There's nothing really, in the early days, she didn't seem particularly keen on fish, although now she seems to be okay with it. So maybe that was a textural thing or a smell thing or, you know, some other kind of sensory thing. So that there isn't really anything that I've given her that's offended her. She has a fairly diverse palate. We eat quite interesting food at home, and as much as possible I try to give her what we're eating. For her own sake, I hope she grows up with a, you know, an interesting, diverse palate.
Look, she is likely to go through, at some point most toddlers will go through a patch where they kind of gravitate a little bit more towards beiges and less threatening foods, but I think the important thing is just to keep up the variety and always offer it. So even if she isn't doing a broad range of color, always offer it, because they do pass through that in the toddler years.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's actually something that I always try and remember. I remember someone saying they can't try a food they aren't offered. So, you know, I mean, I have been offering Santi cucumber since, you know, he was 6 months old. To this day, he will not put it in his mouth, but I continue.
Fascinating. Cucumber is such an unthreatening flavor. I wonder what that's about.
He, you know, I like to think I did all the right things with him as well. And he was also a very interested and keen eater of all sorts of things until about 16, 17 months, I would say. And then almost overnight, he suddenly decided he was only going to eat beige foods. The only interesting thing he eats is curry. He loves curry for some reason. But I suppose it's also on the spectrum of beige. The only green things he will eat are kiwis and grapes. Vegetables, not happening.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's also important there to just keep perspective on it. As long as they're eating something, and, you know, kiwis and grapes are great, keep offering those, and then just, you know, pop on his plate, you know, that broccoli floret that's been nicely freshly steamed, so it's not, you know, so it's brightly colored, and just keep going with those sort of things. They do move through it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, in the early days, I there was a time where I was a bit frustrated by it, and I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? But the reality is that forcing them or kind of strongly encouraging them to eat whatever it is you're serving is a complete waste of time. It only backfires. So the best thing to do is just be completely nonchalant and chill. And, you know, what's that thing they call it? The division of responsibility. You know, you're in charge of deciding what they're eating and when, what is served and when, and they have to decide what it is they choose to eat, and you can't sort of try and get involved there. So,
I mean, two nice ideas you could try with Santi, and this goes for all picky toddlers, is number one, get them involved in actually making the food. So, you know, make him some carrot and cinnamon muffins as an example, you know, those type of things, and even in meal times, and get him involved in actually making it. because often they'll tuck into the batter and into the raw ingredients as they cook, just like we do when we're cooking. And then the other thing is to offer a smorgasbord of choices. So like put, you know, kind of like a, almost like a buffet style meal where you put a whole lot of foods into small plates or onto platters in the middle of the table and let him pick and choose them. And another nice idea with that is actually to do that as a picnic. So to take it outside or to go off to Kirstenbosch and to pack into little Tupperwares and let them graze through those Tupperwares as well. And that often just kind of the less pressure, the more playful, the more involved, it just means that they start to actually experiment again. And then before they know it, they're actually realizing, oh, that carrot that I really didn't want to eat is not too bad when it's part of a carrot muffin or grated carrot that's going into the carrot muffin. So maybe I'll start to eat that normally as well. So, and if you start doing that now as a toddler, you can actually push them through this picky eating phase.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, there's some relief in being able to kind of make all sorts of interesting things for Aurelia that she will eat. Like I was making courgette fritters the other day and, you know, she'll happily munch on cucumber and all sorts of green things. So, you know, at least I've got that to make me feel like I'm, you know, achieving. But yeah, so she's happy and healthy. And she, in terms of development, she's started clapping, which is extremely sweet, and also giving high fives, which is also just adorable. She's really full of personality. She's just so cute.
That is so sweet. And tell me something with those, you know, kind of with those nonverbal signals, so clapping and high fives, is she also pointing at things?
No, she's not pointing yet. Funnily enough, I was actually, when I was looking at the app, mainly to see how old she was, because I can't keep track of the weeks. I just think in calendar months. But I was going through the milestones and it said pointing. It's one thing I haven't noticed yet. But interestingly, she's definitely understanding her name. So she'll respond to her name. And on the verbal cue of, you know, clap for daddy or high five, she responds, which is also just fascinating when you think that they're taking in all this information, even though they can't, you know, respond verbally.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, the basis of language is wanting to share what's in your mind and taking what's in somebody else's mind and actually understanding and taking it in. And so it's really understanding that somebody else is a different mind to your mind. And that's what she's showing when, you know, when she starts to communicate or starts to obey commands, you know, like, you know, clap for mommy or, you know, high five for daddy. Those are all wonderful signals. The pointing's an interesting one because when we point, it's a very nonverbal cue. And so when I point at something, instead of looking at the end of my finger, you'll actually look where that finger's looking at or where my eye is looking at in relation to that finger. And that's a real sign that little ones have moved into that phase of language where they're wanting to communicate. So that's why it's such an important milestone and one that I've actually put into the app. So maybe an activity that you could do with her this week is, you know, take her into the garden and, you know, when there's an adi-dar making noise or an airplane flying overhead or whatever it is, point at it or point at the fridge and say, where's the milk? And point at the fridge and see if she looks in that direction. And quite quickly, she'll start to look where you're pointing and then eventually start to point herself. And it's really worthwhile playing those games with her because it's important for the, you know, kind of the beginnings of communication.
Yeah, this conversation is bringing back so many memories about that phase with Santi because it was so interesting. They just become... The communication becomes much more two-way, I suppose. And I particularly remember when he became verbal, that being a huge turning point for us, especially because we had so many struggles with sleep and so on. It was so hard to understand what it was that was bothering him. And once he could try and express some of that, it made such a big difference. So I also look forward to that with her.
Yeah, and it won't be long now when she starts to actually get one or two words, you know, probably in the next 2 months, she'll get herself a word or two words. And you know, often parents worry about that, you know, when is my child going to speak? And for some little ones, it's a very variable milestone. For some little ones, it's as early as kind of 10 months that they're starting to do mama or bye-bye or ta or, you know, doggy for whatever it is, something in the environment that they're interested in. So some little ones do it as early as that. My firstborn was very verbal. He had 11 words at a year of age. And, you know, and that was, you know, quite a lot of words with meaning for that age. And then one of my friend's children who went on to become a psychologist had no words until 36 months, which was really interesting because it was such a wide variety, you know, range. And at the time I was thinking, my goodness, if you're not speaking by the time you're almost three, there's got to be long-term language difficulties. And yet she went on to do the BA and psychology, and my son ended up in more of the STEM and engineering. So I'm not in the verbal space. So it's, you know, it's quite easy when your little ones are tiny to hang your hat on their milestones and think, well, that shows the brilliance and the capacity for life. But actually it doesn't really, you know, so it's just, what's important is just have a, you know, a very enriched environment, and then hopefully they catch on to it as soon as they have the capacity to.
Yeah. I do remember Santi in particular having this massive acceleration of language when he started school. So he turned two within a month of starting at his first play school, and it was just 3 days a week. But that environment, and it was a small play center school, it was just five kids. That environment really developed his language in a short space of time. I was just amazed. He would come home from school with all these new words. I'm like, I didn't teach you that. And that was also just so awesome to see.
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
He would come home from school with all these new words. Why, I didn't teach you that. And that was also just so awesome to see.
No, absolutely. And that's what we call the language explosion. And for most children, for majority of the population, even if they start to talk a little late, they will actually have a language explosion between 18 months and 2 years old. So that's when the words start to just fall out of their mouth, and it starts to really make sense. What's interesting about Play Sense, I am still involved in Play Sense, is that they, the curriculum 100% focuses on language. The teacher actually gets a list of words that she has to use every week with the little ones. And those words are usually quite advanced words. In fact, a very funny story I once heard was a little one who went to see a doctor because they had a sore throat, and the doctor was using kind of almost parentese and baby talk about, you know, open wide, let me see what's in your mouth. And the little one kind of looked up, who was about 2 years, 3 months, and said, can you see my tonsils? The doctor was like, you're what? And he couldn't believe it. But that was a Play Sense baby. And we do very much focus on quite specific words that little ones need, and also on scenarios where little ones have to use words. So they're almost forced into using their words, which is why he would have had that language explosion. So I hope you're going to be sending Aurelia to a Play Sense school near you as well.
Yes, I hope so. That's the plan. I love the experience, I must say. It felt so appropriate for his age. You know, he was gregarious and outgoing, and so he had certainly the right personality at that, you know, relatively young age to be in that environment. Some of the kids who were born later in the year and maybe had slightly different personalities perhaps weren't as comfortable in the beginning, but he thrived off it. And yeah, I just loved, I think, being challenged and loved. He's so social. He loved being with his friends. And you know, what's wonderful for us is that the friends that he was at PlaySense with, he then went to nursery school with the following year. So last year when he was at nursery for the first time, he was with that same group of kids. And I think that also eased that transition. And, you know, and I hope that they'll be lifelong friends of his. Certainly some of my lifelong friends are people I met in play school whose children are now at school with my children, which is wild.
Yeah. And, you know, it's actually one of the reasons why I started PlaySense was because I really felt very strongly that children needed to be in a group within their community, because that's how you build a village, you know. So those are the nannies that your nanny will walk with your kids. Those are the mums that you'll play paddle with or whatever. And these are the birthday parties that you'll go to. And so you create your village instead of schlepping little ones off kind of 20 kilometers away to go to play school every day, you know, to go to a big school. So, yeah, community-based schooling is very, very important for that.
Yeah, no, we've been very lucky with that. And to have a play sense on our doorstep and now to have a nursery school on our doorstep has been awesome. Again, that sense of community and knowing all those parents. And I do try to get involved in, you know, go to the parents' evenings and all that kind of stuff, because I just think it's important to show up for them in that way. I mean, something interesting that I was talking to some friends about was last year, because work had been a real struggle and I had been so, you know, it had just dominated my life last year. I hadn't been as social as I could have been. And I was struggling to, like, you know, do lifts to play dates and stuff for Santi. And you know, I feel like he was suffering a bit from not being able to go and play with his friends as much and engage. I wasn't engaging with the parents as much as perhaps I could have been. And I've made an effort this year, and it's already reaping rewards. I've made like a real conscious effort to organize social events with his friends and parents after school and dinners with moms and whatever it is. But it really is rewarding, even though I was a little bit nervous about it because it's not my sort of natural inclination. It's really has been wonderful. So yeah, it's all part of that.
Yeah, it's very important. You know, yeah, I mean, I had my first two children, most of my friends were very similar age to me. Well, many of them were friends from school and university. Had children at exactly the same time for my first two kids, but nobody went on and had a third baby except me. And so when Emily was born, I didn't know anybody who had a baby or was having a baby of her age, you know? And so I realized quite quickly that I could stick in my comfort zone and just keep seeing my friends of my older two kids' age, or I would have to really step out. And I stepped out because I knew that I had to find a social life for her. And I can tell you that now, probably my closest five friends are people that I actually met through Emily, and because I went out and made such an effort there. So, you know, that it was really interesting. And I think it's so important to do that, even if you are not a social person. I am social, you're social, but even if you're not a social person, to get out there and have at least one or two friends with kids the same age is very important. It is really how you create your village. And we had quite an interesting experience last week. We went away with 12 adults, couples, and 12 couples, so yeah, 24 of us on a hike. And looking around the breakfast table every morning as we kind of ate before we went out on our slack packing, I realized that these were the people who'd raised their children with me. We have been friends, some of us since school, some of us since university, but all of us through our children. And it's that village that is so important for little ones. So, yeah, creating a village is very, very important.
Yeah, and it requires a bit of effort, you know, most of the time, I would say, but it certainly has its rewards.
Absolutely. It certainly does. And of course, very importantly, as she approaches 9 months, we could not end an episode without talking about sleep, because this is often the age where we can see a little bit of a sleep upheaval and people don't know quite what to do about it. And how's her sleep been going?
Well, I got very excited last week because she slept four nights in a row through and then skipped one and then slept a fifth night after that. And I thought, okay, cool, this is what happens. And this is actually what I wanted to ask you, because I don't have an example, having had such a struggle with Santi, of what the normal, if there's such a thing, or typical progression is for sleep as they start to sleep through in a more kind of a consistent way. Anyway, so she did that. And I thought, okay, this is it. This is what happens. And then this week she's been, I mean, yesterday she woke up at 4:30. This morning it was 5:00. So I don't know what's going on, but what's meant to be going on?
So quick one, when you talk about sleeping through, because everybody defines it differently, is that going down by 7 and waking up at 6? Is that the type of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. So that is amazing sleep. Very, very like spot on for a 9-month-old for certain. Probably a little on the good side in that an early morning waking is often something that we'll see, and sometimes even like a single wake up for a little bit of water in the middle of the night as well. So that all of that would constitute normal, typical, good sleep habits. You know, waking up at 1 or 2 for some water and waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning would still constitute being a good sleeper at this age. So the fact that she's going from 7 until 6, you know, almost 11 hours at night is amazing. You know, so that is really, really good. What often does happen at this age is that they start to either fight bedtime or wake up very early in the morning, particularly if they're having 3 day sleeps. So, or too much day sleep. So what does her day sleep pattern look like at the moment?
So she has 2 sleeps. In the morning, it can vary anywhere from 40 minutes to maybe an hour and a half, not usually longer than that. And then her afternoon sleep is, again, hour and a half to 2 hours maybe.
Okay. All right. So look, I mean, that's perfect. Look, what happens for a lot of moms at 6 months old, little ones are doing 3 sleeps a day, which is that kind of 9:30-ish in the morning, another one around about 12-ish, and then another one at about 3:34 in the afternoon. So that's a very typical 6 to 9 month old routine. And then at 9 months old, one of the reasons why most moms will start to see a disruption is because they haven't actually dropped to sleep soon enough. And you have, in fact, dropped that sleep. And the reason, how many weeks ago did you drop that cat nap in the late afternoon?
It was actually quite a while ago. I would say close to 2 months ago, maybe 6 weeks. It just got to the point where there was no, I could try until I was blue in the face. She was not going to sleep in the afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. So that's perfect. So what you could attempt now is to pull back her morning sleep to make sure that it's either just 45 minutes, or if she does do an hour and a half, to make sure that her afternoon sleep is no more than an hour. So that would be probably what I would be recommending from 9 months onwards, is, you know, the kind of combined time that you would look at is 45 plus an hour and a half would be the combined time in day sleeps. If they're having a lot longer than that, usually that means that the afternoon sleep will be pushing over 3 p.m. in the afternoon. So, for instance, if they go to sleep at 9:30 in the morning and sleep for an hour and a half, they'll push their afternoon sleep out to like 1 or 1:30 and then maybe only wake up at 3. And so, you know, you just need to watch that. So try and just keep in your mind that it's kind of going to be 2 to 2.5 hours in combination across the day. And then put her down at the regular bedtime. So that's the first thing in terms of preventative. Second thing in terms of preventative is lots and lots of movement. It's interesting to me that she loves standing, because standing gives them lots of proprioception, because they tend to bounce in that position. So they get this lovely proprioception going on. And so she's probably wanting more and more of that at this age. So every afternoon, take her on a swing. If you don't have the time, get your nanny to take her outside and go and, you know, swing with her, or give her a little bit of a bounce on a trampoline with you, or, you know, with the nanny. So give her lots of movement would be my second thing. Focus on some iron-rich foods would be the third one. So making sure she's got lots of adequate iron to get her through the night, because it builds our little red blood cells, and that's good for oxygenation when we're sleeping at night. So those would be all the principles that I would basically be looking at. And then, of course, very importantly, but I know she must be doing this, that she settles herself to sleep for all of those sleeps, midday sleeps and night sleeps. If she wasn't, there's no way that she would be sleeping as well as she was if you were having to rock or feed her. So any of my mums who are rocking or feeding their little ones to sleep at the moment and they're still waking up at night, that's probably why. So she, I know, is not doing that. So I would start with all of those principles. And then we get on to the 4:30 or 5 a.m. waking. And it's such a painful waking, because it's not really a time where you can do sleep training. And I don't recommend doing sleep training at that time. So there's two options. One is, well, I mean, you can ignore her and talk to her from your room. Like, you know, go doo-doos now, time to go sleep. It's not morning yet. You can try that option. Probably not going to work. Just going to escalate the crying, and she's not going to be happy. And then the other option that I always talk about is just to break all the rules at that time. So bring her into your bed and let her kind of cuddle next to you and see if she'll fall asleep, or even give her a milk bottle. And I know that it goes counter to everything that I say, but as I say, this, you know, this early morning when we just have to sleep in, we do break the rules. And that's to give her a little bit of milk in her cot so that she can just fall back asleep on her own. So those are the two options. And they're certainly the ones that I used with my kids. My older two, I just brought them into my bed with me. My youngest didn't like coming into my bed at all. She's always been a little bit more sensory. So for her, I would just give her a milk bottle in her cot and she would go back to sleep until 6. So that's what I would do then. And then the third option is the unfortunate one, which is it can be morning for little ones at that age. So yeah, so I think start off with looking at the day sleep time and then breaking the rules. Those are probably going to be your two options.
Yeah, that's quite validating, because that's exactly what I did. This morning, I got her up. She'd sprung a leak in her nappy anyway, so she was wet. So I just thought, I'll feed her and change her, and she can come and have her kind of morning cuddle with us at 5 o'clock. Not such a train smash. Hot was 4, absolutely not. I'm not interested in being awake at that time in the morning. So I did make her a bottle, and I just gave it to her in her cot. And then I went back to bed, and I tried to go back to sleep. Luckily, I did, and so did she. And I had to eventually wake her up at like 6:45, because she was fast asleep. So that worked well.
And I mean, the funniest thing was that my little one, my youngest, I mean, she eventually learned that she could have this bottle at like 4:35 in the morning, and that she would always get one at that time. And I was never too bothered about it. But she worked out that I was the lazier of the two parents at that time of the morning. So we always had a policy in our marriage that I would do anything at night and he would do anything early morning. So that was kind of what we did. And when she was very little, for some reason, and we still can't work this out, because we were actually talking about it the other day, she started to call my husband Lily Pad. And so she'd stand and she'd go, Lily Pad. I would have to stand up and go mix her a bottle. So any time of day she used to do it, it was the funniest thing. So I think somebody had probably said, Dad, lily pad or something like that. And she then hooked onto that. So she used to get a little bottle in the morning, and then eventually, obviously, it just disappeared as she became an older toddler and she slept all the way through. So, yeah, nothing wrong with breaking the rules at that time.
Okay, good to know. I also remember doing it with Santi a lot. I can't remember at what age, because I just can't remember that far back. But there was definitely a phase where he was doing these kind of 5 a.m. wake-ups, and I would just literally throw the bottle in the cot and go and have an extra 40 minutes of sleep and go back to sleep, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it is interesting because they don't generalize it to the middle of the night if they're good sleepers. They just don't. And so it doesn't create bad habits. The only, I suppose, potentially bad habit that we would talk about is that, and I do still stick to this, is that preferably no milk while little ones are in their cot lying down, for a few reasons, one of which is ear infections, the other one of which is tooth cavities, and the third one of which is obesity, because they're associating sleep and milk as they get a lot older. That's not it's not ideal for them. But again, you know, we do what we do because we need to sleep. So, you know, we have to break some rules sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully it's not an ongoing everyday issue. Time will tell, I suppose. But knowing what I know about her, whenever she's kind of gone through these funny little phases, they have been just a handful of days at a time. And, you know, as with all these things, they just continue to change. Nothing stays the same. We just have to ride the wave and see what
exactly
happens.
Exactly. Absolutely. And what will happen between now and when she's a year old, which I can't believe that that's coming up, but when she's a year old, she will probably have dropped one of those sleeps and then be down to one sleep. And when they're down to one sleep, they generally then are sleeping all the way through until 6 or 7 in the morning.
Yeah. I wish someone had told Santi that, because he didn't believe in that strategy. But anyway, this one, I'm convinced.
A little bit.
She'll be on board with the strategy. So yeah, I'm sure she'll be good. We're going on a big trip actually just after she turns one. I was just chatting to Tsitsi about it, and about how this thing where she's pulling up and she, you know, if you hold her, she's kind of toddling. I anticipate she might be a bit of an early walker, which means it's going to be a very, very long 24 hours of me running up and down the middle of a plane with her. But anyway, it's the price we pay.
Yes, no, it will be. It definitely will be. And we can definitely deal with that when we get closer to that time, because there are some little strategies that you can use in terms of medications and flight times and all sorts of things. So let's bring that up closer to the time.
Cool.
Brilliant. Excellent, Julia. Thank you so much for the chat. And yeah, we look forward to connecting again, by which time she'll probably be approaching 9.5 or even 10 months. And but really good to chat.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks, Meg. See you next time.
Thanks, Julia.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.